This is Hashtag History, episode 137. I'm Rachel.
And I'm Leah.
And I just choked my whole way through the intro.
Love it.
We have now made it to one of my favorite points of each season. If you have been with us for a long time, you know that we'd like to cover at least one woman in history each season. And this season is, of course, no exception.
Yeah.
This season's woman is one that I really don't know why, but I became like oddly obsessed with like a year ago.
Really?
I don't know what happened. I was watching the Being the Ricardos movie. Have you seen that?
I haven't seen it. It's okay. On my list, though.
It's very good. It stars Nicole Kidman. Mm-hmm. We were like, I can't remember. It was like Thanksgiving or Christmas or something at my parents.
Yeah.
And we're like, let's find something to watch. We put it on. And then I like became addicted to the person that we're discussing in this week's episode. I started watching reruns of her show. I was watching all these documentaries about her, listening to podcasts about her, and I still could not get enough. I mentioned to my husband that we were doing an episode about her this week, and he was like, oh yeah, the lady you're obsessed with. So here we are.
Great.
Everyone knows now, and I can't wait to dive into this week's topic. This week, we will be discussing Lucille Desiree Ball, best known, of course, as the star of the I Love Lucy show. Ball would set numerous precedents with the I Love Lucy show by using three cameras and 35 millimeter film in front of a live audience. We'll talk about what all that means soon. Being the first pregnant woman shown on television.
Wow.
Wow. Breaking barriers here. And the first interracial marriage shown on television.
Mm-hmm.
She would star in over 70 films over the course of her life, earning the unofficial title of the Queen of B movies. She would later become the first female studio head in Hollywood as president of Desilu Studios. She earned 13 Emmy nominations and was awarded 4, was the recipient of the Kennedy Center Honor, the Golden Globe Cecil B. DeMille Award, Crystal Award, the Governor's Award, Presidential Medal of Freedom, and 2 stars on the Hollywood Walk of Fame.
Why didn't she get 2?
I knew you were going to ask me that question. And as I was saying it, I'm like, she's going to ask me and I don't know the answer. We should find out very quickly if it takes more than 2 seconds to do this. Even the biggest movie stars of all time only have 1. So why does she have 2? She's a megastar in both movies and television.
Oh,
so she got 1 star for her motion pictures and the other for television.
Mm.
That's pretty fascinating. That does say how major you are.
Yeah.
And in how many different industries.
I just wonder, like, I should
that apply to a lot of other people?
I was going
to
say there's a lot of other people that
perhaps it's just the magnitude of like
and the time, probably,
and the time period, too. But like the magnitude of, I'm trying to think of someone that's been in like 10 movies and 1 TV show versus her TV show that she starred in was the most watched television show.
Yeah.
In America.
Yeah.
For years.
Yeah.
And then she also was in almost 100 movies. So maybe it's just the magnitude.
Yeah. Ryan Reynolds, man. Well, actually, no, he's not on TV. Yes, he is. Wrexham.
I don't even know what that is.
No, you can't.
I'm sorry. I have no idea what that is.
Right.
All right. He's no Lucille Ball. Yet.
Yet. Ryan Reynolds. He's making his way downtown. Walking fast.
Faces pass. And I'm homebound. Okay. I'm so excited to talk about her today because I think there's a lot the general public knows about her, a lot that we don't know about
her. Totally, yeah.
And a lot of features we see in Hollywood today for which she set precedent. But of course, before we can discuss Miss Lucille Ball or Ryan Reynolds even, we have to first discuss this drink. I'm Rachel.
And I'm Leah.
And this is Hashtag History,
the podcast for both history nerds and history haters alike,
where we dive into history's greatest stories of controversy, conspiracy, and corruption.
This week's cocktail was sponsored by our Instagram follower and a true friend of the podcast, Travel Historic.
Yay.
Yay. They said, quote, "Of course, I had to sponsor at least one. So happy to have a new season coming out. Have missed you ladies and cheers to the 2 newest and littlest members of the fam."
Thank you. They say thank you. I say thank you for them on their behalf.
Oh, they're so cute.
They're really stinking cute. I appreciate you saying that because, of course, I think they're the cutest babies that ever existed.
They're really cute. They're pretty dang cute.
They're pretty dang cute.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for sponsoring the cocktail. That was so
nice. Yes. So apparently Lucille Ball, in my very short research that I did, was a pretty big bourbon drinker.
Pretty big drinker was right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. In addition to being known to whip up blended margies at home. So I was like, spirit animal.
I was just going to say, I knew there was a reason. And I liked her so much.
In an article I found on pinhookedbourbon.com about famous bourbon lovers, they wrote, quote, especially when she spent time in New York and LA, the legendary comedian liked to have a pre-dinner bourbon or two. She wasn't particular about how it was served, sometimes on the rocks, sometimes with soda, and sometimes mixed with a little water.
I like it.
So, to honor her love of bourbon, we are drinking a bourbon-heavy drink, which is actually named after her, called the Lucille Ball.
I love it.
So, it contains 2 ounces of bourbon, about a half an ounce of ginger syrup, half an ounce of honey, and half an ounce of lemon juice. We doubled it.
Yeah,
because it's a small, very small. It's a small, like... We're using faux, not NA bourbon.
Yeah, it's not. We didn't put 4 ounces of bourbon.
We'd be on the ground by the time this episode is over.
Which is why it's such a small drink, right? Yeah, we doubled it because, we're drinking non-alcoholic
bourbon, yes,
as our listeners now know. Otherwise that would be madness. This would be the end of the episode.
I'm pretty sure we have done something like that before.
We were wild.
We were crazy.
We were crazy. literally, I think back and I'm like,
we had 4 cocktails in a row. Most of them were like at least 2 ounces of alcohol,
and it wasn't like that big of a deal. To me,
no,
like it was like by the last one, I kind of felt.
Yeah,
I don't want to say kind of. You did the editing. You probably knew we felt them.
There was some more than others. Like I think of the cluster where it was like Titanic.
Oh, I'll never forget.
And like the Hartford Circus Fire or something like around that era, we were getting
that era. Oh God, yeah. We were getting together to drink, and while we were there, we decided to record a podcast,
right.
Not the other way around.
Exactly.
Yeah, we're much more sophisticated now.
Right.
Much more mature.
Right.
Mostly we're just under constraints.
Right.
We're limited now.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's a super simple drink. You just shake all the ingredients together with ice, pour it over ice. And I was going to put them in ball jars, which I think would be really cute because Lucille Ball.
I love that idea.
But yeah, I think that'd be cute if you have any at home to put it in a ball jar.
I love that. And I'm really excited about this drink. And before we even take a sip, I say we do a redo when we can.
Like a real one.
Yes. That's good.
Yeah.
Ooh. This is very good.
Mm.
The faux liquor that we have is...
$40.
is very expensive.
Yeah.
It's delicious.
It is good. Yeah. No, I don't know if it's just all the other stuff that's in there, like the ginger syrup and stuff.
But I'm almost leaning more towards it is the faux liquor that's in it.
Because
the faux liquor
better.
Has like a cinnamony smell to it. And that's what I'm tasting.
And it
here.
Is like, I can't remember the brand name, but it is like a bourbon, a faux bourbon.
Mm-hmm.
Not just whiskey.
A whiskey. Yeah. I'm going to go all the way up to 9.
I mean, this is my jam.
This is so good.
I'm going to say 9.
I'm so glad you doubled it. And then, when we are not under constraints, let's do 4 ounces of bourbon.
Can we?
I don't think I can.
No, we can try.
I think
we can try.
I think it will take me 8 hours to drink it. I was just, no, I'm serious. I'm serious. I'm serious.
Do it. I'm going to pump and dump.
Oh my God. I don't know if I actually can. I'm being serious. I think I'm a weak bitch now.
But you think you'll just get sloppy or what?
No, I think I'll pass out. I'll black out and you guys will have to drag me from wherever I am to wherever I need to go. I'm being serious.
Okay. I mean, who knows? I'll probably be the same. A lightweight.
Mine's really bad. I think I'm really lightweight because I stopped drinking a little bit before when we were trying to conceive. Then obviously didn't drink for 9 months. And then I had a short period where I was drinking, but it really wasn't that much because I was pumping. And then now not at all.
Yeah.
I think I'm probably really, really lightweight now.
That's okay. Sad. That just makes it more fun.
Okay. I'll start with the 2 ounces.
You start with 2 ounces.
Sounds good. Sounds good. All right. So The disclaimer I often give with big topics such as today's topic is that there is simply not enough time to discuss it all, unless we were to do an entire series on Lucille Ball, which, you know, not opposed to. No one has the time, but the passion is there.
We could do a side project. Another side project.
I definitely have the time for that.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Yeah.
For sure.
Like, okay. Not just a whole season, but like an additional podcast.
Don't tempt me. I actually felt like a little spark go off. Okay, so reel it back in.
Sorry.
I would. While this is going to be one of our longer episodes, I did really try to include all the major highlights and the interesting tidbits about her life and her accomplishments, but there's still so much that we won't be able to get into. So I wanted to encourage our audience to check out two different sources if you're interested in learning more than we are able to discuss today. So one of those is on Prime. It's called Lucy and Desi. It's this amazing documentary that Amy Poehler actually directed.
Oh, love her.
And it's really good because it has a lot of original audio and interviews and, you know, bits and pieces from the shows and the movies and stuff that Ball was a part of.
I'm going to watch that. I've been on a huge documentary kick lately.
Oh, you'll love this one. And then the other really great source for information is season 3 of the Plot Thickens podcast.
Oh.
This podcast is where it happened.
Okay.
Yeah. This podcast is the primary reason that I became so invested in learning so much about Lucille Ball. Yeah.
Why did the plot thicken?
The plot, it thickened.
It got
thick. Okay. It was thick.
Oh
yeah, it's really good. It shares all kinds of information that I didn't hear about or learn about anywhere else other than there. So I highly recommend that one. Now on to the episode.
Yes.
Lucille Desiree Ball was born on August 6th, 1911 in Jamestown, New York.
Let's go Leos.
That's true, huh?
Yeah.
She was the oldest of her parents' two children, having a brother named Fred born 4 years later. Following her father's work as an electrician, Ball moved a lot in her early childhood, from New York to Montana to Michigan. In 1915, when Ball was only 3 years old and her mother was pregnant with their little brother, her father would contract typhoid fever and pass away.
Mm-hmm.
It's horrible. Ball tells this awful story about how a bird flew into the family home and it got trapped inside. You know, it's like circling and frantic and trying to get out.
Yeah.
This happened. I couldn't get clear information if it happened like the day that her dad passed, or it was just like
sometime after,
but still in that deep mourning heaviness of it. But she links the two with one another, the experiences. And from that day forward, that event of watching the bird trapped inside the house was so traumatic for her that she actually developed an irrational fear of birds for the rest of her life. Like, even extending so far as to refuse to stay in a hotel if it had birds on the wallpaper.
Oh, wow.
Or like pictures of birds in picture frames. Yeah.
I didn't know that about her.
Me neither. Isn't that great? Like, she would go on sets, and if there was a bird, she'd get that out of here. I'm not going to be here. And it took her a while to create the connection, figure out where that fear had originated.
Wow.
Ball's mother moved the little family back to Jamestown, where she would eventually meet and marry a man named Ed Peterson. Not recommended to date someone that is straightforward about the fact that they don't like kids when you have kids.
Yeah, not great.
Not great. And soon after the two got married, he and Ball's mother would move to Detroit without the kids.
Where were they?
Okay, so I'm glad you asked. They had Fred, her brother, stay with her mother's parents, so maternal grandparents, right?
Mm-hmm.
And Ball would stay with Peterson's parents.
Why?
Her step grandparents that she hardly knows.
Of the guy that literally doesn't want her.
Yes.
And said that and made that clear.
Yes. So she would stay with them for 4 years and would describe this as a super difficult period in her life due to how strict her step grandparents were. They were super religious, super conservative. There was like one time she got in trouble because her step grandma caught her looking at herself in the mirror and her grandmother told her she was being vain. And so she was punished for that.
Okay, Divergent.
Ooh, yes. As I was putting this together, I was trying to remember, what is that?
Yeah.
That book that has no mirrors. Thank you for the reminder. Yeah. I knew it was a teen book and I couldn't remember which one.
You can always count on me on
the YA
dystopian.
The YA apocalyptic.
Yeah, post-apocalypse. Yeah.
The family struggled financially growing up, and what little money they did have was depleted further when her grandfather was sued for the wrongful death of a little neighborhood boy.
Yikes.
Yeah. So on July 4th, 1927, Ball's grandfather had taken her brother Fred and Fred's little girlfriend, Joanna, out to shoot a .22 caliber rifle that he had recently gifted Fred. Different times.
Yeah.
Another neighborhood boy, 8-year-old Warner Erickson, also appeared. He wasn't necessarily invited. He wasn't not invited
mm-hmm.
To hang out. And when it was Joanna's turn to shoot, she accidentally shot in the direction of Warner, striking his spine and causing him to become paralyzed for the rest of his life.
Oh, wow.
Later in her memoir titled Love, Lucy, Ball stated that her grandfather had offered to the Erickson family to cover all of their medical bills, but the Erickson's instead decided to sue. When they eventually prevailed in the suit, Ball wrote about the way this affected their family and its finances. Quote, "They took our house, the furnishing that mother had bought so laboriously, on time, week after week, the insurance, everything. My grandfather never worked again. The heart went out of him. It destroyed our life together there." Unquote.
Mm-hmm.
When Ball was only 14 years old, she would begin dating a 21-year-old man named Johnny DeVita, who had potential ties to, like, the mob.
Of course he did.
Of course he did. Frightened by this, Ball's mom finally listened to her daughter's desires to begin acting, and in a final attempt to get her away from the boyfriend to encourage them to break up, she allowed for Ball to begin acting school in New York. In 1925, she began with the John Murray Anderson School for Dramatic Arts, which turned out to be an awful experience for her.
Yeah, she's just not having a lot of luck.
No, like, oh my gosh, she just, it's tough listening to her growing up.
Mm.
But then to see
what
the
she
rise that she has is pretty amazing.
Yeah.
She was constantly overshadowed by her classmate and future Hollywood star, Betty Davis. She was also rather timid, causing the school to write to her mother, quote, "Lucy's wasting her time and ours. She's too shy and reticent to put her best foot forward," unquote.
Shy.
Yeah, I know. Isn't that funny?
Yeah.
And that's something that kind of sticks with her. We'll talk about it more as we go along. But she is kind of a reserved, introverted person, which you would not expect when you see
I Love Lucy.
I Love Lucy. Yeah. Ball didn't allow this to stop her, though, and continued attempting to make a career in entertainment, beginning work as a model in the late 1920s, early 1930s, going by the stage name Diane Belmont.
Mm.
Work was hardly steady, though, and Ball found herself with essentially no food, with the exception of homemade tomato soup that she made from watered-down ketchup.
So that's not soup.
It's watered-down ketchup is what it is. And whatever uneaten food she could take from local coffee shops.
Mm.
It was during this time period that Ball was told to dye her natural brown hair blonde, and the general public would never see her natural hair color again, with her dyeing it the signature red color later in life.
Yeah.
But more on that in a bit.
Okay.
Because we, of course, know her primarily as a redhead, I wanted us to take a moment to look at a picture of her both as a natural brunette and then as a blonde.
Oh, she's so pretty.
She's,
you were like zoomed in on her breast while I said that.
She's so beautiful. Sorry about that. Isn't she so beautiful?
She's gorgeous. She's gorge.
I think a little bit of that is lost.
Mm-hmm. Well, okay.
Yeah.
We'll talk about this, I'm sure.
Yeah.
But like in I Love Lucy, and that's what most people primarily, I mean, that's mm-hmm. what I know her mostly mm-hmm. from. She's like wacky and
yes.
kooky
yes.
and they're not focusing on her beauty,
mm-mm.
but she is beautiful.
Beautiful.
Absolutely beautiful.
Yeah,
she looks so classy, smoking mm-hmm. her long. What is it like?
Yeah, what? It's like a cigarette that had
an
application on it,
yeah.
like a tampon application. That's all I can think of. So that's her natural brunette.
Yeah,
this is her as a blonde.
I actually don't think it's as flattering, but it's still gorgeous. Like,
I agree with that. I think the natural and then the red mm-hmm. suit her really well.
Yeah.
Blonde,
less so.
Less so, but like really beautiful. And I think it like really changes her.
Oh, absolutely. She looks like a different person.
Yeah. If I saw this, I don't know that I would say, oh, yeah, that's Lucille Ball. Of course.
I would not know that was Lucille Ball.
No.
No.
But I mean, regardless, she's stunning.
Yes.
In every picture.
Mm-hmm.
While being fitted one day for a dress, her legs collapsed beneath her and she was unable to stand back up. Mm. She went to see a doctor and in her memoir wrote that, quote, "He told me that the pains were arthritic, possibly rheumatoid arthritis. This is an incurable disease which becomes progressively more crippling until the sufferer ends up in a wheelchair for life," unquote. Unable to walk, Ball had to give up her modeling runway days and return home to her family for 2 years to recover. So here's where I think it's important to note that there's no official confirmation that Ball did indeed have arthritis. This is just like the most widely accepted assumption. It's what she was told by her doctor.
Okay.
These are the earlier half of the 1900s. We don't know quite as much as we know about medicine now.
Yeah.
Regardless of what her health conditions were that she suffered from, this totally sidelined her stardom dreams for 2 years, and it completely devastated her. Why I don't necessarily think it was arthritis is because it's like she had this crippling disease for like two years.
And then she was fine? Yeah.
Which, having family members that have arthritis, is like, it's something that has affected them their entire life.
Yes.
And continues to affect them.
Yes.
And just progressively gets worse.
Exactly.
Yeah. By 1933, she had recovered enough to move to Hollywood, California, where she landed a handful of small and sometimes uncredited roles in films. She was cast as one of MGM Studios' Goldwyn Girls when one of the other ladies originally cast had to drop out at the last minute. And Ball said in a later interview that because it was all such a rushed decision, they didn't even have the time to screen test her, for which she was grateful. According to her, she never passed a screen test because, again, it's like her true personality just never came out. Mm-hmm. She was too shy.
Yeah.
At the insistence of MGM, Ball changed her blonde hair to red and never went back. She maintained the red hair all the way until her death. So now, of course, I think we need to look at a picture of her with her iconic red hair.
Yes.
This is obviously a little bit of a later picture.
Yes.
Not what she looked like when she first dyed it red.
No.
This is just one of my favorite pictures of her.
I love it.
I think she's stunning.
And it suits her very much, mm-hmm. I feel, the mm-hmm. red hair.
It does. The red works for her.
Yeah.
All the way into her 70s. It worked for her.
Yep.
Swindled is a true crime podcast about greed. The anonymous host, who refers to himself as a concerned citizen, tells true stories of white-collar criminals, con artists, and corporate evil in a dark and deadpan narrative style that will leave you trusting nothing. There are episodes about the disturbing histories and practices of food giants such as Nestle and Chiquita. There are episodes about man-made environmental disasters such as the Bhopal gas tragedy and the BP oil spill. There's even a Swindled episode about Mother Teresa. Nothing and no one is off limits. Critics have called Swindled remarkable and enraging, horrifying and maddening, meticulously researched and true. For the love of money is the root of all evil. 100 plus episodes are waiting for you. Listen to Swindled at swindled.com or wherever you listen to podcasts.
All Ball needed was a chance. Just one foot in the door and she would show everyone what she was made of. And that was certainly true. She continued to get roles in movies, albeit B movies, but she really became known for being someone you could depend on to do things that other women at the time were unwilling to do. At this time in the film industry, a woman became famous, I mean, for like lack of better phrasing, for like how hot she was, how sexy she was, how sultry she was.
Yeah. That's right. Not to say they're not also hard workers or talented or whatever, but like they made it there, unfortunately, at that time because of their looks.
Yeah. Thank you for clarifying that, because that's what I didn't want to say. Like, they're known just because they're pretty. They worked really hard.
Yeah, a lot of them, and in terrible, terrible conditions, mm-hmm. and scrutiny and mm-hmm. judgment.
100%. Ball didn't herself consider herself to be particularly pretty or talented, and she said she really got her start because she was willing to do the oddball things that the other pretty girls were not. Mm-hmm. So things like, if in a movie, if a pie needed to be thrown in someone's face, she was willing to do that. Or if she needed to slip and fall, she was the person that would do that.
Yeah.
Perhaps the most important of these films that Ball would appear in around this time would occur in 1940, when she played one of the lead roles in the musical Too Many Girls. It was on this set that she fell in love with co-star Desi Arnaz. Arnaz was a handsome Cuban-American actor and band leader, 6 years her junior. He was only 23 when they met. Yeah. But when you know, I guess.
Yeah, they're both adults. It's fine.
Yes. And we'll talk much more about their marriage as the episode continues, but they do make me think of those people that there's just that like immediate connection and spark that you just can't explain.
Yeah.
There's like always that one person that you have that immediate draw toward.
Mm-hmm.
And you can't explain it because it doesn't make sense.
Yeah.
And you as a couple don't actually make sense. Mm-hmm. And that was them.
Yeah.
Like 100%. Everyone was telling them don't do this, but they did it anyway, and they like really did it because they got married 6 months later.
Dang.
Yeah,
they did it.
They really did it. 6 months after meeting, they got married on November 30th, 1940. And from the very start, it was tumultuous with constant fights, but then immediate makeups.
Yeah.
The couple also struggled to even really work on their relationship, given that Arnaz would eventually join the military and later travel for several years with his band, all while Ball was continuing to attempt to achieve some kind of notoriety in Hollywood.
Right.
Ball has been quoted as saying that in the first 10 years of their marriage, they only spent maybe a year of it together.
That's crazy.
That's crazy.
People who live like long distance relationships, if you can make it work, that's great. But I don't,
For 10 years?
For 10 years.
And especially, this is not a time when you can just shoot each other a text.
Yeah, that's true.
Like you have to schedule out, okay, call me at 8 p.m.
Jeez.
Isn't that crazy?
That's crazy.
Ball continued to struggle to hit true Hollywood success. So at the encouragement of her husband, she began to look into broadcasting. She would end up earning the lead role in a CBS radio comedy titled My Favorite Husband. So think of it as the genesis of the I Love Lucy show,
okay,
where the wife, Lucille Ball in this case, gets up to some crazy antics. She and her husband find some resolution, and she ends each and every episode with the line, quote, "Thanks, George. You're my favorite husband," unquote. So I've listened to a few snippets of it here and there, and I think it's pretty funny. So I've pulled 1 minute of audio for us all to listen to. This is from an episode in which Ball's character is discussing her mother-in-law.
Here's the mail.
Let me see. A blotter from our insurance man, an ad, and here's trouble.
Who's it from? The income tax collector?
I wish it were. It's a letter to George from his mother.
How can you tell?
I just sense it. No one else addresses a letter to George Cooper only, marks personal all over, and then seals it with scotch tape.
My goodness. Doesn't she ever write to both of you?
Write to both of us? Huh? She won't even admit we're married.
Oh, you don't mean that. She was at the wedding, wasn't she?
No, she was there all right. I suspected it when someone tripped me going down the aisle. And I was positive when she threw a fake heart attack that interrupted the ceremony.
Oh, Mrs. Cooper.
Honest. She flopped just before the preacher said white. For half an hour, George was pronounced man and is there a doctor in the house?
Well, if that's true or not, she's certainly used to the idea of your being married by now.
You think so, huh? Then why were the towels she sent us last Christmas marked his and his?
It's cute.
It's cute, right?
And that's a very, it does remind me a lot of I Love Lucy. Like,
it
I can
does.
See how it's a predecessor to that.
It 100% is. So what began as a one-time special evolved into 124 episodes.
Wow.
The show was such a huge success, and people were really taking notice of Ball and her amazing wit and comedic timing. CBS loved her so much, in fact, that they proposed to her that this radio show be recreated into a television show.
Mm-hmm.
And here comes one of the first examples we see of Ball being a total badass.
Mm-hmm.
She told CBS that she would love to star in the television show. However, only if her husband in the show could be played by her real life husband, Desi Arnaz.
Yeah.
But, I mean, because people are racist, CBS executives rejected the idea, not thinking the public would accept a television show about an interracial couple.
Right.
And I think that does really place us in the mindset. It wasn't so much the concept of like...
Like, there were plenty of interracial marriages
yeah,
at the time, I'm sure.
It was the idea that, like, Americans wouldn't believe that they were really married. Like, how could a white lady be married to a Cuban guy?
Yeah.
Like, they like wouldn't accept it and identify with it. They, CBS producers were fearful it would alienate the American audience.
Right. I mean, I feel like it's the same reason why husbands and wives were sleeping in the same bed
mm-hmm.
at this point in time. They always
mm-hmm.
have been, but
mm-hmm.
for whatever reason, television thought they had to put them in separate beds.
Yes.
Like,
and we're going to talk about that later
yeah.
too. It was television's weird code of ethics at this time that you could not allude to anything even
out of
remotely.
The quote norm.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. And again, they were concerned that the audience wouldn't be able to identify with such a couple.
Yeah.
And so Lucille Ball walked. The woman who had been fighting her whole life to become successful in Hollywood walked away from the biggest opportunity she had received to date, because they would not accept her proposal to bring her husband into the picture as well.
Wow.
As romantic as that sounds, and I do believe there was certainly some romance and loyalty involved in that decision, it's important to note that these weren't purely romantic motives.
No, I don't. I totally believe that it was a moral thing, or like a, probably had something more to do with like a code of ethics. I don't know.
I think you're being nice when you hear. I think you're being nicer. I totally get your point, like based on principle.
Yeah.
But for Ball and Arnaz at this point, they're like 10 years into their marriage.
Right.
Things are not good.
Okay.
They're starting to grow apart.
She wanted to have a reason for him to be there around.
Locked down.
Okay.
Yes. Because of their conflicting work obligations and schedules and Arnaz's frequent infidelity and severe alcoholism, a huge motivation for Ball to bring Arnaz along for the ride with this television show was so that they could finally spend more time together. And also so she could keep a more watchful eye on him.
Mm-hmm.
When CBS rejected the proposal, Ball and Arnaz decided instead to create their own live acting show that they took on the road. They also established their own production company named Desi Lou, a compilation of both of their names, mm-hmm. which I think is so cute.
Yeah.
It wasn't long before CBS noticed the success the show was having and reluctantly brought the couple back to officially create the I Love Lucy show, starring Lucille Ball and her on-screen and real-life husband, Desi Arnaz. This would be the first time that an interracial couple was shown on television.
Wow. Breaking ceilings.
Mm-hmm. Even if you're not particularly familiar with Lucille Ball, I think most people are generally familiar with I Love Lucy and its unbelievable success.
Yeah.
And so something I want to note here, if this provides anyone with some encouragement or motivation, Lucille Ball struggled for decades to get her name in lights. And when the I Love Lucy show aired in October of 1951, she was 40 years old.
Oh, I didn't realize she was that old. Mm-hmm.
And she looks amazing.
I know.
She looks like amazing.
Uh-huh.
I would never have thought that.
Yeah.
So just a reminder to everyone that you're never too old for your dreams to come true.
Yeah.
As I've already implied, and most people already are aware, I Love Lucy was a massive success. Similar to the premise of My Favorite Husband, I Love Lucy followed Lucille Ball, named Lucy Ricardo, in the show, and her husband, named Ricky Ricardo, in the show, along with their best friends slash landlords, Fred and Ethel Mertz, as Ball got herself wrapped in antics and chaos in every single episode. Mm-hmm. The show was so wildly successful that it was renewed for 6 seasons, with 4 of those seasons being the most watched television show in the United States. One of my favorite accolades about the show is that one particular scene in the episode titled Lucy Does the Tango, they had the live audience laughing so hard that the sound editor actually ended up having to cut out half of the soundtrack. The audience laughed for 67 seconds straight.
Oh my gosh.
It's pretty insane. I watched this scene myself and it is pretty funny. Not even because of the writing or just the silliness of the story.
It's the delivery.
It's the delivery.
Yeah.
And if you need an example of why Lucille Ball became as successful as she became, just YouTube this one particular scene and you'll have your answer.
Yeah, I'll have to look it up when we're done.
It's super funny because the premise of the show is, or this episode, it's like they are trying to raise chickens to produce eggs, and the chickens aren't hatching eggs, and so Lucy and her friend Ethel go and buy eggs from the store instead.
Mm-hmm.
And they want to sneak them into the barn to like surprise their husbands, right, with these eggs. So she's shoving all these eggs into the front of her outfit, and of course that's when Desi comes home and he says, you know, they're going to this like event, and he's like, we need to practice the tango, you keep putting it off, let's practice the tango. So the whole time they're dancing, you can see her facial expression like, oh my god, I hope these eggs don't crack or fall out. And at the very end of the tango, he slams her against his chest and they all just crack, and oh my god, I was laughing.
Okay.
It's very funny.
Yeah.
Like I mentioned in the introduction of this episode, the I Love Lucy show created precedent in a number of ways. For one, it was the first scripted television show to be filmed using 35mm film with 3 cameras in front of a live audience. So I'll explain mm-hmm. what all this means.
It's the first multi-camera show, right?
It is the first multi-camera show.
I don't know
show.
About the 35mm mm-hmm. or whatever, but yeah, like that's now the norm
mm-hmm.
in television.
It's the industry standard.
Yeah.
And it was set by Lucille Ball and Desi Arnaz.
Wow.
Okay, so we're going to get really into the weeds here.
I love it.
great.
I love that stuff.
I do too, actually. I was like researching like early film techniques. Totally. And I'm like, what am I doing? Stop. Like, I was going down all these rabbit holes. In the early days of live television, the majority of programs were filmed in New York City in front of live audiences and were then aired live on the East Coast, since this is where the vast majority of television-owning American citizens lived at this time.
Mm-hmm.
This meant, however, that the show would have to be replayed later for those on the West Coast. A technique known as kinescoping or kinescope recording was used, in which a camera would be pointed at a video monitor to record what it was playing, and this would then be saved onto either 16 millimeter or 35 millimeter film. So, I mean, you're already cringing. Think of this
quality.
The quality. Think of it like an old school video camera recording what it's playing on a television
screen.
That
must have been horrible.
It was horrible. It goes without saying that the final product would be grainy AF, and this was the product that was then delivered to radio stations across the U.S. for later broadcasts of the show that the East Coast had originally received live.
Wow.
This was until I Love Lucy. Producers and sponsors of the show were insistent that Ball and Arnaz relocate to the East Coast so that the show could be filmed there. The couple refused, however, demanding that they remain at their home in Los Angeles. Mm-hmm. This was the first time in a decade that they were both finally under the same roof, and they intended to keep it that way.
Yeah.
Them staying on the West Coast was all but unacceptable to sponsors who did not want their East Coast audience, who again were the wider television viewing audience at this time,
yeah,
to receive a grainy product a day after the smaller audience on the West Coast received it.
Mm-hmm.
To combat this, Ball and Arnaz agreed to take a pay cut in order to afford filming and recording the show directly on the more expensive 35 millimeter film, which allowed for the East Coast audience to receive the product directly from the film, as opposed to it having been recorded via the kinescope.
Okay.
Because Desilu produced the show and owned the original film, and because this original film was shot on the higher quality 35 millimeter film, this also allowed for reruns to be possible, becoming the first television show to do so.
Syndicated.
Yes, this created syndication.
It's crazy.
Isn't this amazing?
Yeah.
They were doing so many things. And what's so amazing is so much of this, like the production of the show, is Desi Arnaz, mm-hmm, that did all of this. Lucy was the star. She was the creative mind. He did all of this, learning what kind of lights and learning
technical
what kind
stuff.
Of the technical,
yeah,
stuff. And I mean, he set the industry standard. It's,
wow,
amazing. He was, we don't even have a chance to talk about him and his life, mm-hmm, but his family, when he was a teenager, had to flee Cuba because of the Cuban Revolution.
Yeah.
They left with nothing. They had nothing.
Mm-hmm.
And so the fact that he ends up doing all of this is just really remarkable.
Yeah.
Additionally, you talked about this already, because the show was shot on three different cameras, it was able to capture different angles all at the same time,
mm-hmm,
eliminating the need to do retakes. In fact, Arnaz was adamantly against retakes because of how expensive it was to operate the cameras on such high quality.
Oh, I'm
film.
Sure. Yeah.
Because of this, the cast rehearsed over and over and over again. It wasn't unusual for them to still be on set at like 10 p.m., still going over the script.
Yeah.
Like, Lucille Ball was, she was intense in the rehearsal room.
Yeah.
There were no retakes.
That's
there were
crazy.
No redos. It's crazy in front of a live audience.
Yeah. Like I knew that obviously they wanted to avoid that, and the three cameras helps to do that.
Mm-hmm.
But I had no idea that they just didn't do,
yes,
retakes.
Right. Not just that they didn't want to, but like
they didn't do it.
They didn't do it.
Wow.
Everything had to be perfect the first time.
Yeah.
And when you watch the show, you may think some bits are ad lib. I've thought that before. Just all of her little facial expressions and stuff. That,
yeah.
Especially when you're playing off of an audience.
Mm-hmm.
Some of it might be in the moment.
Yeah.
They weren't. Even the smallest little quirks were rehearsed down to the finest detail. Every one of Ball's facial expressions was practiced over and over again until it became routine.
Wow.
And that, again, speaks to kind of like the shyness and the timidness that we've talked about with her. Other people have said about her, like, they agree that she's amazing,
mm-hmm,
but it sounds harsh to say it, but like directors and producers that worked with her said she's amazing. She's not actually that talented. Like she's just a crazy hard worker.
Yeah.
Like she's someone that needs rehearsal. It kind of made me think of myself with test taking. I was always a good student.
Mm-hmm.
It's because I'm not one of those people that can, like,
you're not a natural whatever.
No, not at all.
Yeah.
Like, I couldn't sit down and just take a test. It's because I studied and studied and studied and studied. And you can be a good student.
Yeah.
But it requires a lot of work.
Mm-hmm.
That is the same vibe that I get from her.
Yeah.
It's because of how much hard work she put into it. is why the final product was so good.
Which I actually find more inspirational.
Which is also really amazing and inspiring.
To just have the natural talent.
But not attainable.
Yeah. Like there's nothing to, yeah, there's nothing to attain to or mm-hmm. to, you know, aspire to.
Yeah.
Thank you.
If, right.
When it's just pure and natural talent.
Right.
When it's hard work.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I can do that.
Mm-hmm. I Love Lucy would set the industry standard, like you said, for the three cameras at different angles for shows performed in front of live audiences that is still used
yeah.
to this day.
Like any sitcom you see mm-hmm. on television, they still do that.
And it's amazing that it started with this show again, because Desi Arnaz, like when he proposed the idea of, nope, we're going to stay on the West Coast because we're going to do it with three cameras and it's going to be on 35 millimeter film.
He probably thought it was insane.
Well, yes. And the sponsors of the show were like, you know how to do that? And he was like, yeah, of course I know how to do it. He had no idea how to do it. But look at what it became.
Yeah.
The I Love Lucy show established so many other precedents, including featuring the first pregnant woman on television being taken to the hospital to give birth. I make that small distinction because apparently a few years prior, the Mary Kay and Johnny show was actually the first to feature a pregnant actress with her pregnancy written into the show.
Mm-hmm.
But I Love Lucy is certainly the more well-known for this milestone and the one that's considered to be the first. Like, if you Google it, first pregnant woman shown on television,
it'll say I Love Lucy.
It'll say I Love Lucy. Like I mentioned previously, working on the I Love Lucy show together was pretty much the most amount of time Ball and Arnaz had ever spent together.
How did it go?
I'm glad you asked. I'm glad you asked. They worked together very, very well.
Okay.
Very well. Like, they were amazing business partners.
Mm-hmm.
Before, however, literally the next line I have in my script is, before beginning filming for the show, Ball had actually filed for divorce.
Okay.
So that's how it was going.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. The couple were able to reconcile, but they continued to struggle through multiple miscarriages, infidelity, supposedly at this point on both of their parts,
okay,
and alcoholism. There's this story that her son tells that he had like playmate over, they're playing outside and they can hear inside the house Desi and Lucy screaming at each other, like throwing glass against the walls.
Yeah.
And his friend is like, oh my god, is everything okay? And their son is like, oh yeah, that's just my parents.
Yeah,
that's what they do, which is not okay and not healthy.
No.
But it was so common for this couple to fight and then make up.
Interesting.
Yeah. When Ball was nearly 40 years old, she became pregnant with her daughter, also named Lucy. However, it's spelled with an I-E at the end instead of a Y.
Interesting choice.
Mm-hmm. The Desiree in Lucille Ball's name is her mom's name. So I think she was just keeping that tradition going, sort of, in a way.
Okay.
Differently, but similar.
Okay.
She was actually pregnant when the show very first began. However, she kept this pregnancy hidden from the audience.
Mm-hmm, putting it was paper on her belly and stuff.
Exactly. I feel like this is one of my hidden talents, mm-hmm. is I can always detect on a show when the lady's
100%.
Pregnant.
100%. There's times where I'm like watching a show and I'm like, she's pregnant. And we look it up and yep, there she was pregnant.
That's happened so many times to me.
Yep.
And Alex is like, no, I don't think so. I'm like,
No.
You can see it in the face. You can see it in
not
the hands.
Not just the face, but also
the walk.
Like they're holding towels in front of their stomach for some reason, which has nothing to do with the plot line. Like why are they holding towels?
And you've been folding it for the entire scene, the same towel over and over. Yes. So maybe it's not a hidden talent. Maybe everyone can
do it. No, I do think it's a hidden talent that you and I happen to have in common.
Fabulous. So she kept that pregnancy hidden from the audience, holding towels in front of her belly. She would become pregnant once again, this time with their son, Desi Jr. And this pregnancy would make a huge appearance on the show.
I'm not going to lie. I find it weird that their children were named after that. Like both. Like if you have one daughter or one son named after.
Yeah.
That's fine.
But to do it to both of them.
Both of them. So now it's Lucy, Desi.
I see your point. That is very weird.
It's almost like when twins marry each other.
Which really bothers me a lot. That really bothers me a lot.
It's disturbing.
Because I have twins, I get a bunch of twin stuff on my Instagram.
Yeah.
And I recently saw a couple.
Yeah.
That are like identical twins. And it's disturbing.
It's disturbing.
It's a reel where they're like pretending to accidentally kiss the wrong.
What? See, that's what I'm scared of.
Yes. Like coming up behind them, giving them a hug, and then being like, oh my God. I'm not interested.
Yeah.
What's
please skip.
Please stop sending these.
Flag.
Report.
Report.
Block. Report the FBI.
Inappropriate.
Flag for inappropriateness. I don't want to see it. Ew.
But same vibes.
But same vibes. I see your point. Yeah. Brother and sister that are also named after romantic partners.
Exactly.
I totally see your point.
Yeah.
Ball's character would be pregnant to coincide with her real life pregnancy. And you've already talked about this. It sounds crazy to think about, but American television viewers at this time were wildly conservative.
Or maybe not the viewers themselves, the expectation or the networks, the television producers, networks, whatever, were setting a standard that what they thought the viewers wanted.
Yes. Thank you. Actually, you're a genius because... Exactly what you just said is what's going to end up happening.
I'm sorry. I keep spoiling it.
No, I appreciate it. I appreciate it. You phrase things better than I do.
That's not true. That is not true.
It's because I studied for a very long time. So the networks were very conservative. They had these really archaic code of ethics.
Yeah.
They were so conservative, in fact, that like you already shared, Ball and Arnaz's characters didn't even sleep in the same bed in the show.
And that wasn't just that show. There were multiple other shows.
Yes, it was industry standard at that time. If you can't even sleep in the same bed on a television show, you certainly can't imply that anything sexual could have led to a pregnancy. In fact, when Ball attempted to use the word pregnant in the script, she was told that she could not. Rather, she could only use words like expecting or expectant. She shared in an interview that she wanted to say something like, I feel like a pregnant goose.
Mm-hmm.
And they told her they had to rewrite the script and she could say she felt like an expectant swan.
That's stupid.
It's stupid.
And not as funny.
Not as funny. And as anyone that has been pregnant, you feel much more like a goose than a swan.
Yeah. I can attest to that.
Confirm. Yeah. Pregnant, the word pregnant was simply too much for the networks.
Yeah.
Exactly to what you just said. The American audience, however, showed that they felt otherwise.
They said pregnant in their day-to-day lives.
They said it every day.
Yeah.
They slept in the same beds with their partners every day.
So why is it so unheard of to think that they'd be okay seeing that on television?
Yes. And the American audience showed that it didn't bother them at all because they became absolutely obsessed with the pregnancy.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, in the episode where Ball gave birth to her baby, which she strategically scheduled to air that episode on the same day that she was having her scheduled C-section to deliver her son in real life.
Jeez.
My mind is blown.
I know. Hey, if anybody ever tries to tell me I can't work up until my due date, I'm going to
throw this one out there. Dude, this episode would garner views from more than 44 million Americans,
mm-hmm.
more than those that would watch President Eisenhower's inauguration the following day.
Mm-hmm.
At the height of its viewership, the show was watched by roughly 70% of all Americans.
That's a lot.
That is so many.
And so, I can't remember. It was probably Armchair Expert where they were talking about something like this, that like mm-hmm. nowadays there's so many options that even like the most popular shows, it's like you're not getting 70% of the American population. But like back then, there was so few options.
Mm-hmm.
That sounds bad. But
no,
like,
it's true, though,
that
there were fewer
70%,
options.
70% of the people, you know, watched the show.
And what I love about that, too, just this time period, is that you could always depend on, if you ran into Barbara at the grocery store, oh my God, did you see the episode last night? As opposed to now, I'm like, the show that you just mentioned Ryan Reynolds is in, I'm like, I don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah, exactly.
She's mad.
My eyes were like,
exactly.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. But like, other than Tiger King, when was the last time we all united around a show? And even that, I don't know that 70% of Americans watched it.
I can't say that 70%, because I don't even know that 70% of Americans have Netflix.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right. Shops in the U.S. would actually close their stores early on Monday nights when new episodes aired, with signs posted on their doors stating, "We love Lucy too."
Oh, cute.
Some cities even stated that they noticed a drop in water pressure on Monday evenings because they believed viewers had waited until the end of the new episode to use the restroom. Is crazy.
Wow.
I kind of love this.
I
like
do too.
I just like the feeling of community.
Yes.
And that there was like a mutual love for something.
Yeah.
Despite the success of the show and Lucille Ball as its lead, she wasn't entirely without controversy. So we're going to think about the time period here.
Yeah.
We're looking at the 1950s. The time of the Red Scare,
mm-hmm.
when Senator Joseph McCarthy essentially claimed every American he came across was a communist. Maybe that's a bit of a generalization, but he did establish a committee to conduct hearings to determine if certain members of the government and armed forces were indeed covert communists.
Yeah.
These hearings would eventually extend to celebrities as well, with big names such as Walt Disney, Charlie Chaplin, and Ronald Reagan being accused of being communist.
Even like scientists like Oppenheimer. He actually was tied to communism a little bit, but
well, and for Lucille Ball, it wasn't totally out of the blue for her to fall prey to this as well, because it would be discovered that decades earlier in 1936 she had indeed registered as a communist, done at the insistence of her socialist grandfather, whom she adored. When this was found out, the press ran multiple headlines about it, including one that screamed in red print. Well, I'll let you read it.
Oh,
we have a picture.
Okay. Lucille Ball was red in 1936.
And it's in red print,
and it's
too.
In red, which you don't see that in newspapers.
You don't see that.
It says, I Love Lucy star denies commie now.
Yes. So she called the press to her house and told them that despite having registered as a communist at the insistence of her grandfather, she had never actually ever intended to vote as one, nor be involved with the party whatsoever. Arnaz, having fled Cuba during the Cuban Revolution due to communist control, was particularly offended by the assertion that his wife could be a communist. For a brief period of time, I imagine they felt what it must feel like to be canceled in today's terms. Ball feared the continued success of the show if her audience no longer trusted and believed her. Despite these fears, she refused to cancel the live taping of the show the week that the headlines went up. And instead of doing his normal warm-ups with the audience before the filming of the show began, Arnaz instead addressed the pressing situation, ensuring the audience that, quote, "The only thing red about Lucy is her hair, and even that is not legitimate," unquote. The couple would end up receiving a standing ovation, and the show would carry on as usual.
I understand why in certain situations when people are being quote unquote canceled or whatever, they just are like, don't address it or whatever.
Yeah.
But I like that, I don't know, that they were brave enough, or
it takes a lot of bravery
to just stand up and be like, listen, here's the truth. And then let's get back to business.
Definitely.
Let's get down to business.
To defeat the Huns. Yes. What I think is amazing on her part is the fact that she was like, yeah, let's continue with the show. I know me, my first line of defense is like, retreat, retreat.
Oh, absolutely. Retreat. Yeah, that's my natural tendency would definitely be to just like hide.
Yeah, I will not be filming in front of a live audience today. Thank you very much.
Yeah.
But yeah, not only doing that, but then addressing it right up front too. And doing it with like levity and a joke is really cute.
Yeah.
I Love Lucy would end in 1957, and not long after it, in 1960, so would Ball and Arnaz's marriage. Between the stress of running a production studio together, navigating infidelity and alcoholism, in addition to just constant fighting and the tumultuous relationship the couple had had from the very beginning, they were both ready to call it quits.
Yeah.
The couple's daughter, Lucy, actually shared later, though, that, quote, "The best thing that ever happened to them was getting divorced."
Yeah.
They had a great divorce. They had a very successful divorce. It was fantastic. If their parents can't get along and that happens, then kids should be so lucky to have a divorce like my mom and dad did, because they were kind. They never said bad words about each other in front of their children, and they stayed friends till the day they died, unquote.
It's the kind of divorce that's the only kind of divorce you could ever hope for.
Definitely. The former couple would also continue to work together and work together well. They continued operations at Desilu Productions, later Desilu Studios, eventually buying out RKO Studios, making them the owners of the largest television production company at the time.
Wow.
Their studio would actually be responsible for producing television hits such as the original Star Trek series, The Dick Van Dyke Show, and Mission Impossible.
Nice.
Arnaz's drinking and overall overwhelm running the studio would eventually lead Ball to buy out his shares, making her the first female executive head in Hollywood. And as badass as that sounds, she hated it.
And I've heard wasn't natural to the role.
Correct.
Yeah.
Like, they weren't great under her direction.
Right.
And I think that makes sense. Like, she's a creative. She loves acting.
Yeah.
She wanted to continue. And she was. She was doing double duty. She continued acting in shows and, like, producing and managing.
Yeah.
It's not possible.
Yeah.
It caused her a lot of stress. And once the opportunity arose to sell it to someone else for the right price, she did so. She would sell it to what would later become Paramount Pictures for, in today's money, the equivalent of $149 million.
Wow.
Ball would continue to star in several television shows, including spin-offs of the I Love Lucy show, as well as some Broadway productions. Mm-hmm. Both Ball and Arnaz would remarry, and they would both end up being married to their second partners for 20 plus years, longer than Ball and Arnaz had been married to one another.
They learned from the first time around.
I think so, which I really like.
Yeah.
That they like learned so much in that marriage that they knew what they wanted and needed in the second one.
Yeah.
They continued to be very good friends, with Ball calling Arnaz often to ask for his advice about different projects she was working on. He even ended up producing one of her later shows.
Yeah, that's cool.
Mm-hmm. In 1986, Arnaz was battling lung cancer. Ball would drive to be with him in his final days. About a month later, on their wedding anniversary, they would speak over the phone for the last time, in which they would tell each other how much they loved each other. Just 5 days after Arnaz passed, Ball was being recognized at the Kennedy Center Honors, where the presenter read aloud a letter that Arnaz had put together for he wanted to read at the event.
Mm-hmm.
It was a super sweet speech all about how Ball was the star of the I Love Lucy show, how it never would have been a success without her, and that she is the greatest actor and performer of their generation. He closed the letter with, quote, P.S., I Love Lucy was never just a title, unquote.
Stop.
It's one of those that it when I say it makes me sad that they didn't work out, I totally understand why they didn't work out.
I actually almost like it.
Really?
I like that they were able to love each other even after.
Yeah. It was
just
the second half of their relationship.
It was a different type mm-hmm. of relationship.
Mm-hmm. I like that.
I don't know. That makes me happy.
Yeah. It's funny because like the American public, when she remarried, they were like, no, thanks. Like they were like, nah, we're not really going to accept that guy.
Yeah.
Because I think you create in your mind this like fabricated image of celebrity couples. Yeah.
But the audience isn't just making it up. They're pushing that out there, right? This different idealized version of their marriage.
That's totally true. You're right.
Was literally syndicated.
You're right. It was literally syndicated. Like literally. I appreciate that because I have fallen prey many times to like when a celebrity announces their divorce.
Oh, being upset.
Almost being angry, where it's like, you are the ones that are projecting this on your social media that you guys are amazing and you're so in love and they're your best friend and all that.
Yeah. I could see why people are upset by it, especially in this case when it's like every week you saw their marriage overcoming little things and being really strong and whatever. That's not reality, though.
It's not reality.
Yeah.
And when they went home, they were throwing glasses at the walls.
Right. In front of their children.
Right. 3 years later, on April 26th, 1989, Ball would pass from an aortic aneurysm at the age of 77. Despite all of the accomplishments we have already discussed, one of Ball's greatest legacies is the mentorship she provided to so many future comedians, mm-hmm. perhaps the most important of which was Carol Burnett. Despite the 22-year age difference between the two, they became fast friends and colleagues for many, many years. Ball would sadly pass away the same day as Burnett's 56th birthday, but, and I'm going to try not to cry as I say the next bit.
Okay.
So you can't either.
I probably will.
But for many years, Ball had a tradition of sending Burnett flowers on her birthday.
Mm-hmm.
Burnett said, quote, she would always send me flowers on my birthday. She died on April 26th. That afternoon, I got flowers from her that said, happy birthday, kid, unquote. She had already scheduled for the flowers to be delivered.
Yeah.
Burnett has said that still to this day, not a day goes by. She doesn't think about her. Lucille Ball was deeply loved by her family, friends, and the American audience as a whole. We have her to thank for so much of what television is today, and also for being such a fabulous feminist icon. Thank you all so much for listening to this episode of Hashtag History.
We will share the pictures that we discuss on this episode to our Instagram. And as always, all sources used to put together the episode will be found on our website at hashtaghistory-pod.com.
Subscribe to us on whatever podcast platform you use. Share about us with your family and friends, and then give us a rate and review.
And be sure to check us out on Instagram. We're at #history_podcast.
And come join us over on Patreon.
Patreon,
where for as little as $1 a month, you can help support our books and booze supply. You also get access to some behind-the-scenes content, an automatic 15% off all merchandise, and we'll mail you cards and stickers. Thank you.
Thanks.
Bye. This is hashtag history. Excuse me. Let's start again. Is that just me?
No.
And now it stopped. It's Lucy.
Oh, she's here with us.
Well, I'm embarrassed by that. She's like, you got all the facts wrong.
She's like, this is actually inaccurate.
This is actually bullshit. laboriously is how you pronounce that, right?
That's how I would say it.
Okay. I sound like Dexter's Laboratory every time.
Laboratory. We started watching because, like, sometimes on like Saturday mornings while we're eating breakfast, we'll put
on. Do you watch cartoons? Like,
we'll do
cartoons?
like SpongeBob or Dexter's Lab are the two.
God.
Yeah.
I want to start doing that.
Yeah, do
I
it.
I love that idea.
It's good.
We just watch little fruits that dance on the TV all the time. But I love that idea.
Oh my God, do you hear my stomach?
I did.
There's food. It's not that. It's probably me digesting food.
Where the presenter, I said that word.